The following program was pre-recorded at an earlier date.
Welcome to this morning's program, To the Point. To the Point is sponsored by the historic Cozy Restaurant and Inn located on Frederick Road in Thurmont, Maryland. To the Point's purpose is to do exactly what its name indicates, to avoid the endless chatter of mindless radio, and to drive straight to what's most important to you, the point. And now your host, Vicki Grinder, gets To the Point.
And good morning, and thank you for tuning in to AM 1450 The Source. This is Michael Betteridge sitting in for Vicki Grinder. A happy Saturday morning to you. You're listening to The Point, and we welcome you. We have a very special guest in our studio this morning. We have Elizabeth Comer from the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society. Good morning, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm great.
Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about the Historical Society. What does the Historical Society do?
Well, the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society just celebrated its 40th anniversary. Our mission is to preserve and protect and celebrate the rich history of the Catoctin Furnace and its village.
Elizabeth, this is an unusual thing for most people don't get involved in things like this. How did you get started with the furnace?
Well, it is an interesting story. I grew up in Kriggerstown, and my family attended Harriet Chapel, which is the little Episcopal church in Catoctin Furnace. And I remember my parents being very interested in the small stone and log houses that were the worker houses that still are standing at the furnace. And my mother was a historian. She got her degree from Hood College, and she wrote her senior honors thesis on Catoctin Furnace. And subsequently, we have been able to publish that. But we got the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society as an organization began 40 years ago, and the main impetus was that the furnace and the village were slated to be torn down as part of the construction of U.S. Route 15. 806, which is Catoctin Furnace Road, goes right through the village, and the construction was going to just take down and tear down the village and the furnace. And a group of men, my father, Frank Menser, who was superintendent of Catoctin Mountain Park, Earl Schenkel, who was a local businessman, and Clem Gardner, who was a neighbor living at Auburn, decided that they needed to get together, start the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society, and lobby and work with officials and the State Highway Administration and save the village.
Yeah, to keep the highway from blowing right through the middle of an historic site that... tell us a little bit about the location for those listeners that don't know where it is.
Well, Catoctin Furnace is just south of Thurmont. It's at the toe or foot of Catoctin Mountain at Catoctin Hollow Road. As you drive up or down Route 15, when you see the signs that point you to Catoctin Furnace, it's off on the east side of what is Route 15 now. And it was placed there in the late, mid and late 18th century, because of the confluence of very important natural resources that allowed and actually encouraged the construction of an iron furnace. And those natural resources were a good iron ore, limestone, lots of wood off the mountain, and of course water for the power, to power the bellows to make the iron.
And all those resources are right there where in that location?
Yes, they are. And it was interesting, the original surveyors who would have come and explorers who would have come west, you know, to what is now Frederick County, noticed that these resources were together. And that's when the Johnson brothers, who were, frankly, entrepreneurs and always looking for, a new and good investment, and believe me, an iron furnace in the 18th century was an excellent investment, they bought the land and started Catoctin Furnace, built the furnace and the houses.
So it was the surveys, the original surveys of that region that identified the resources that were there that caused the entrepreneurs to see that there was a special need there that could be met.
Exactly. And so they started building. First, there was a small forge, and then in the 1770s, they decided that there was enough demand to actually build the iron furnace and a lot of the worker housing that you still see when you drive down Route 806. On either side of 806 or Catoctin Furnace Road, there are stone and log structures, and those do date from the Revolutionary period.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting that you brought that up, because there was another very famous young surveyor who did something very similar to that. And he was employed by Lord Fairfax to survey the western region of Maryland. Do you know who that was?
That would be George Washington.
George Washington is correct. And have you heard the story about how he literally changed the whole nature of farming, of agricultural farming in northern Virginia and central Maryland, by discovering the land had become very depleted? And when he surveyed it, he acknowledged that the land was no longer producing crops. So he came up with the idea of putting limestone, and that's how the lime kiln got built down in the one that's just down in Buckystown.
Right, exactly. Now, the lime, to bring the nutrients back into the soil, that was essential. And, you know, they were very close to the soil. They understood what soil needed, coming from this long agrarian tradition. So they were master farmers, and right. In addition to all the other accomplishments.
Now, you mentioned the one ingredient that I'm not so sure about that's there is iron ore.
Yes. Now, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
Catoctin, at the toe of Catoctin Mountain, there is excellent iron ore. And there was iron ore in various parts of Maryland. There's even bog iron on the eastern shore, and our first iron furnace in the United States in Massachusetts used bog iron. Bog iron, like, is simply iron that is found in a wet,
like
in
a marshy bog area.
Okay. But it's usually not very much. What we had at Catoctin, which makes us very special, is a vast supply of high quality iron ore. Mm-hmm. There were actually three iron banks at Catoctin, and each produced really well. We never ran out of iron ore. We were in operation for 130 years, whereas a lot of small iron furnaces in the young United States, well, they may have produced for 20, 30, 40 years, but then they just went out of operation because they didn't have enough ore.
Right.
We never ran out of ore. We had high-quality ore, limestone, wood, and water, everything we needed.
That's incredible. That's hard to believe. Now, this may be something that our listeners wouldn't even put into perspective, but that area at the time, and around pre-Revolutionary War when it was being surveyed and settled, that was literally frontier out there, wasn't it?
It was frontier, and that's one of the reasons the Catoctin Furnace is so interesting. These businessmen, first the surveyors, then the businessmen, came out from Annapolis and what is now Prince George's County, which was highly developed in the young colony. And they came to what was the wilderness and built this iron furnace, and then also built the large houses that the iron furnace owners lived in, houses like Auburn and Springfield.
Right.
And Rose Hill in Frederick. Those were three of the Johnson brothers' house. And those were huge and stately homes. They wouldn't have been out of place in Annapolis, but they certainly were unusual for the frontier.
Yeah, we say the word frontier, and I don't know if people really truly understand that, because we don't have any. Really, our frontiers on this planet are gone. There are no. And when I say frontiers, I mean, let's put it in perspective for the listener, that the furthest outpost, the last dwelling of human beings in this country at that time, pre-Revolutionary War, was Cumberland.
Yes, we were pushing west, but, you know, as we pushed west, unfortunately, we were, coming up against the Native Americans, who were really not... You know, it was not a good time for them, obviously, because they were being pushed out of their lands. But we were, it was uncharted territory. That's really the only way to put it. So
yeah.
You can imagine, you know, young men, surveyors or explorers leaving the comfort of their home and saying, you know what, I'm going to go over that mountain and see what's there. And they found beaver and they found, you know, all kinds of game and all kinds of resources. And that's part of what our westward expansion is all about.
The Swiss explorer who discovered Sugarloaf Mountain, who came down the Monocacy and settled at a little trading post, married an Indian and settled at a trading post, in the 1750s. He did a journal of the Monocacy River, and at one point in the valley region where Lily Ponds exists, in his journal he wrote, and this is in a book called The Potomac River, he wrote in his journal that the whole entire valley was covered with elk, bison, deer, antelope, and buffalo.
Yeah, I think we would be very, very surprised to turn the clock back and go back 200, 250 years and see what a wilderness this was. The rapid pace of modernization, particularly since World War II, is dramatic in this area.
I mean, let's face it, we're a society that's landed a guy on the moon and put, you know, Discoverer vehicles on Mars and everything else. Those are our frontiers now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And at that time, in the late to middle 1700s, pre-Revolutionary War, people for entrepreneurs to come up into this region, into the Catoctin region, and open a furnace must have been just a revolutionary and dangerous concept.
It would have been. And they were doing it, though, for a very sound economic reason, which was, of course, profit. We were not allowed by England to make any finished iron goods. And you can imagine if you're building a house, you need nails. If you want to put a door on, you need a hinge and you need a lock. If you need a hoe to till your garden, we couldn't make any finished iron products. And so the need and the value of finished iron products was immense. And as soon as the Council of Safety asked Catoctin Furnace in 1774, 1775 to make cannonballs and to make cannons for the Continental, the Revolutionary Army, they were desperate for those. They couldn't go to England and say, oh, by the way, can you sell us some cannon so we can shoot at your redcoats?
So we
had to start making things for ourselves, and the value was enormous, the profit also.
We're listening to Elizabeth Comer here from the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society, and we're talking about some events that are about to come up in May and the history and the background of the furnace, which is just such an important part of the history and background of many of the families in this region. We're going to step aside for a short commercial break, and we'll be right back. This is To The Point, and we're coming to you on a wonderful Saturday morning. Thanks for tuning in.
Honesty and integrity, open communication, a team of experts, a proven history of success. Business Management Company Incorporated, a full-service accounting firm, has been serving the region for more than 20 years. BMC offers a full range of accounting services, including monthly books, payroll, accounts payable, professional income tax preparation, business financial consulting, and insurance. We specialize in small businesses because we understand the difficulties of operating your own company in a tough economy. Years of experience combined with down-to-earth, friendly, personal service will help you reach your goals and maximize your company's profitability. Located in Frederick, Maryland, near the airport, from payday to tax day, Business Management Services provides everything a business needs to run efficiently and accurately. BMC. Honesty, reliability, and integrity. Check out our website at bmcaccounting.com today and watch your business grow.
Hi, I'm Betsy Day, president of the Community Foundation of Frederick County, a nonprofit organization dedicated to connecting people who care with causes that matter. Our strategic grant initiatives, focusing in the areas of affordable health care, housing, and school readiness for youth, need your financial support. Every dollar you give to the fund supporting these areas will assist in providing more services and helping more people. The Community Foundation has been serving Frederick County for more than 26 years, helping to build a stronger, more vibrant community through grants to nonprofits and scholarships to students. With your help, we will continue to enrich the quality of life now and for future generations. Learn more about the Community Foundation and our strategic grant initiatives by visiting the impact section of our website at www.cffredco.org.
Hi, this is Johnny Erickson Tata with a message for Autism Awareness Month. One out of 88 children are now diagnosed with autism, so you likely know someone who's impacted. The degree to which autism affects a person varies. Some individuals are mildly affected and can live lives of independence, yet others are so severely impacted that they need constant supervision. How can you help? Well, next time you're running errands, see if there's anything you can pick up for them. Occasionally offer to stay for a couple of hours with their family member affected by autism so that the family can have a break. And finally, if you see a child having a difficult time, what we often refer to as a meltdown, take a moment to think before you blame the parent for lack of discipline. Offering an encouraging smile can make a world of difference. For more information, visit us at johnnyandfriends.org.
And welcome back to The Point. My name is Michael Betteridge. I'm sitting in for Vicki Grinder on this wonderful Saturday morning, and I have in the studio with me Elizabeth Comer. And Elizabeth comes to us from the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Michael.
Elizabeth, tell me a little bit about the furnace as it was first started, the gentleman who founded it, and what it looked like early on.
Well, the Johnson brothers, there were four brothers in a large family of, I believe, 12. They had 12 siblings. There were four brothers. One was the governor of Maryland, Thomas, and then there was James and Baker. And they decided to invest together and build Catoctin Furnace. This was in the 1770s, and they also, they didn't just invest in the furnace, they moved their families to the Catoctin Furnace area, built their houses, and lived there. So they were hands-on. One was a skilled iron master, very important. The others were, you know, financial and law experts, and of course the governor was in politics, and they saw this potential because of the abundance of iron ore, limestone, wood, and water at Catoctin, and they bought more than 10,000 acres, basically the whole mountain that you see behind Catoctin Furnace, which is now Cunningham Falls State Park and Catoctin Mountain Park, and started the furnace. And their first order was from the Philadelphia, from the young United States, just after the Declaration of Independence was signed. And the order was for cannonballs and bombshells and cannons. And those, we know from the correspondence that the bombshells were sent to the Battle of Yorktown. The Continental Congress was desperate for these munitions, and the letters are quite interesting because they say, please, how soon can you get us these?
Right.
So that was their first order.
Isn't that interesting? Fascinating. So that little humble little beginning had a major impact on the liberty of the people that live in this country right
yes,
now.
Yes, if we hadn't won the Battle of Yorktown, things would be very different,
yeah,
I think.
That was definitely a turning point, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely.
This little furnace was started, and the first big order came in, and it was kind of it sounds to me like it's the right time at the right place. How did they find laborers to work in the furnace? Because I know the furnace, if this area was frontier, and it was, there couldn't have been a lot of people out here back then.
Right. Well, the Johnsons brought their enslaved Africans up to Catoctin Furnace, and they worked to build the furnace and also to make the iron. And we have an interesting project we're seeking funding for currently and hoping to start on in the next couple months. There's a slave cemetery in Catoctin Furnace that was excavated when U.S. Route 15 was widened in the late 1970s. And we are going to produce a study of mitochondrial DNA,
wow,
trace isotope, and craniometric analysis of the 35 individuals who were taken from the slave cemetery and are now at the Smithsonian. So it's a joint project with the Smithsonian.
Okay.
And what we want to do is see if these individuals came from a part of Africa where iron making was Benin, for instance, had some of the finest iron making in the world.
Wow.
And they may have come from there. We also want to try
Benin
to find out.
North Africa.
Benin in North Africa.
Okay.
And we also want to try to find out who the descendants are of these people who built the furnace and worked to make the products, because that history of the African American work at the furnace has really been lost.
I wonder if there's any Sally Hemings in that mix. You know, remember the big DNA study of the Hemings family and
yes,
Thomas Jefferson?
Yes.
That proved that Jefferson was mm-hmm, the great 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 grandfather of those children.
This could happen.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, fascinating. You mentioned the Johnsons came out and brought the African Americans with them. Where did they come from?
They were in Annapolis. They were in the Annapolis area. Annapolis was really the main, and what is now Prince George's County. This is where most people lived. It was the center of commerce in Maryland.
I doubt if a few people know this, but this was Prince George's County.
Yes, this was. It was a huge county all the way to the west.
The entire area that now encompasses Montgomery, Howard, Frederick County was called Prince George's County originally.
It was.
Yeah. So now they brought these people out and they worked in the factory. Where did the skill sets come from? Because, you know, you told me there's a governor, and so we've got a lawyer. And mm-hmm, who was the iron master? Who
One brother, James, knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He knew how to make iron.
Okay.
And so that skill, and there were obviously overseers. But we believe that there is a strong possibility that some of the enslaved Africans had those skills with them. But, you know, iron making was something that took place in Europe, took place in Africa.
Right.
So, you know, it wasn't just making the iron that was a skilled labor. Being a collier was a very skilled operation.
What's a collier?
A collier goes up into the mountain, cuts the wood, and makes charcoal. It is a very long and arduous, work. And when you make the mound of for charcoal, it has to burn for 2 weeks after you light it. You must tend it 24 hours a day. If it burns too hot, it ruins the charcoal. If it burns too cool, of course, you won't get charcoal. So it's a highly skilled, it's a highly skilled job. And then just when you drive to Catoctin Furnace, look at the stonework. Highly skilled stonemasons. Look at the log houses. Highly skilled builders. You know, all of these people who knew how to build and make at Catoctin Furnace brought those skills from somewhere.
Fascinating. What did the area look like around the furnace in terms of where did people live? Where did they go to church? Where did they go buy groceries and food? Give us an idea of what this village looked like around the time of the American Revolution. Because right up the street, we've got a little town that is now Thurmont, that used to be called something else, I believe.
Mechanicstown, yes.
Uh-huh.
And but Catoctin Furnace would have been a very self-contained, in many ways, as villages had to be at that time, self-contained, village. The people who lived there would have had kitchen gardens for their, basically, coffee, sugar, and maybe fabric were some of the few things that you had to actually buy. Most everything would be homemade, and that
tradition was, continued throughout the 19th century in Catoctin Furnace. There would have been many houses, though. Right now, you see several dozen as you go up and down 806. There would have been as many as 80 worker houses at the peak of the furnace production in the 19th century. They went up the mountain. They went out to the east, down to the south, and to the north along, but stringing along Catoctin Furnace Road.
Well, as a matter of fact, the Historical Society has been very much involved in restoring one of those houses. If you're driving south on 806, coming past the zoo from Thurmont, you pass the zoo and you go down about a half a mile, and there is where you come to the area where Harriet Chapel is. Is that where all the houses are?
Yes, Harriet Chapel is really at the north end of what is now the village, what is left of the village. And then just below that is the restored log double house. We call it the Collier Log House.
Collier, there's that word
yes,
again.
Yes, absolutely. We don't know exactly who lived in the log house, but it's very likely it could have been a collier.
Okay.
So there were two families in that duplex, if you will. One was a large side, one was a small side, and they, we think it was built about 1810, and it was one of the original, obviously, houses. There was no, you were asking about the church. Until the 1820s, there was no church in Catoctin Furnace, but roving ministers would come by and give services on a, on an infrequent basis. And we have one account in our book about a minister standing at the top of the stack and giving a service, and the people were weeping. These are the enslaved Africans, because they couldn't go to church. There was no church. They had to work 7 days a week, and the whistle blew, and they had to go back to work. And it's just a very poignant description of the conditions of working in the iron furnace by this minister.
These were missionaries.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, and the missionary church, by the way, was All Saints in Frederick, which was built in 1746.
Right, that was much earlier, because Frederick, of course, was the market town.
Yes, it was. Frederick was a very important town in the Revolutionary America. So, now, American Revolution is in full swing. Everything's moving along. Orders are coming in. That area is growing. What did Thurmont look like at that time? What was the connection between the two towns?
Well, they were connected by rail and later by trolley. And Thurmont was really the jumping off point as you were going over the mountain. That's why it had its name, Mechanicstown. You could get your wagon fixed. You could get, there was a tannery. There were all kinds of industries in Thurmont. But it really was the last place before you went off to the west where you could get commodities, get whatever products you need, and get things fixed and just be ready to go.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to step aside now for a break, our second commercial break, Elizabeth. And you're listening to The Point, and we're talking about the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society with Elizabeth Comer. We'll be right back.
Smell that? The unmistakable aroma of steak and shrimp. If you're hungry for steak and shrimp, join the Cozy Restaurant every Wednesday and Thursday from 4 till 8 p.m. for Surf and Turf Thurmont style. Try our mouth-watering steak and shrimp buffet. Hungry for crab legs? Get all-you-can-eat crab legs, too. That's the Cozy Restaurant every Wednesday and Thursday, 4 till 8 in Thurmont, Maryland.
Your local sheriff is the highest law enforcement officer in your county. His duty is to protect you from criminals, including those who inhabit the halls of government. in Sussex County, Delaware, we are grateful that there is a courageous sheriff who knows the law and is willing to do his duty. Sheriff Jeff Christopher is that man, and I am inviting you to come and learn how you can help him defend your God-given rights, including your right to self-defense. On Saturday, April 6th, please join nationally known Sheriff Richard Mack and the Institute on the Constitution at the Sheriff and Citizen Summit in Georgetown, Delaware, where you can meet and show your support for Sheriff Jeff Christopher, and where you can receive constitutional education that will enable you to be eligible to officially serve as a member of the Sheriff's Posse. The date is Saturday, April 6th. The place is Delaware Technical and Community College on Route 404 in Georgetown. The event will begin at 9 a.m. with doors opening at 8:30. Please register for this free event by visiting theamericanview.com or call 866-730-9796. See you Saturday, April 6th.
If you love food
and your heart, go grocery shopping with me, Mon, short for monounsaturated fat.
And me, polyunsaturated.
We're the better fat sisters. Over here in the cooking oil aisle, choose canola, olive, and other vegetable oils. Liquids are better for your heart than solid fats.
You'll also find us in fresh foods like avocados, nuts, and fish.
Before you put any baked goods, packaged, and prepared foods in your cart, read the labels.
Avoid our bad fats brothers, saturated and trans. They love to clog your arteries.
We're heart healthier, but let's face it, we're fats.
We all have the same 9 calories per gram, so watch your portions.
And thanks for shopping with us.
The Better Fat Sisters. Be kinder to your heart. Learn more and get recipes at heart.org/facethefats. Nationally sponsored by Canola Info.
Welcome back to The Point. This is Michael Betteridge sitting in for Vicki Grinder, and I have here in the studio with me this morning Elizabeth Comer from the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Michael.
Elizabeth, when we went to break, we were talking a little bit about the right about the Revolutionary War time. Let's move ahead from that if we could. Let's move up if we could to post-Revolutionary War. What happened? What were the changes that occurred at the furnace after the war ended in 1784?
Well, once we were at peace, the furnace began to produce commodities for the household because we were getting more and more settlers, and there was just a huge demand for stoves and kettles and pots, andirons, firebacks, all the kinds of things that you would need in your home, either in Maryland or further west in the young United States. So these items were beautifully made. We have examples of a Catoctin furnace stove at the Manor area at Cunningham Falls State Park, and there's also one at Catoctin Mountain Park, both in the visitor center. And they're beautifully molded. They have flowers, and some have a portrait of George Washington. There are firebacks. Wow. Just beautiful products made at the furnace.
These are the old iron stoves that our great-grandmothers used to cook on with the big heavy lids that you lift out with
yes,
stoves.
And you pull the side open, and there's an oven there.
A baking oven. Yeah.
And they would also heat, so they were very
They kept the house warm.
Yes.
No doubt about it.
Yes.
I remember her coming out in her heavy nightgown every morning to light the burner.
They were just a huge improvement for a housewife over an open hearth cooking setup, which was the original. Those stoves were made, and all kinds of household products, and that continued off and on throughout the 19th century. The furnace would be in blast 24 hours a day, 7 days a week when times were good.
Wow.
And there was a big demand. But then things would happen, and the demand would drop, a new furnace would open, and they would be making a cheaper product or something like that, and the furnace would, at Catoctin, would close down. But each time someone bought it and started it up again until its final shutdown in 1903, and the gentleman who bought it then owned a furnace in Bedford, Pennsylvania, Mr. Thropp, and he actually dismantled the furnace, anything that he could actually take away.
So he salvaged it,
and he took those items to Pennsylvania. Then there was a stave mill at the furnace for a few years, but by the 1920s, everything had shut down at Catoctin Furnace completely, and it became a sleepy little village. And for the first time, the people who lived there were able to buy their homes. Before that, everything belonged to the company, but then when the people who lived in the furnace in the village could buy their own homes, they did, and the descendants of many of them are still living in the houses.
Now, how do you know this information? Where are the descendants and the purchase of these? Where does that come from?
Well, a lot of the descendants, luckily for us, are members of the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society. Mm-hmm. We also, when my mother was doing her extensive research of Catoctin Furnace, she did oral history. She looked at census records. She looked at religious records. Mm-hmm. She looked at land records. Anything that was available is in her book, which is called Catoctin Furnace, Portrait of an Iron-Making Village. And it was just published, we're very lucky, it was just published by History Press last month, and it's available for sale.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you mentioned your mother. When did she start working on this book?
She started working on this in the 80s when the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society was founded and there was an intense interest in preserving the village. She and other people who were in the area wanted to make sure that not only the history of the furnace was preserved in writing, but also that the houses were preserved and that the furnace itself was interpreted for everybody to see.
You mentioned a ledger. What were some of the local names that were on that ledger? I'm sure that many of our listeners are probably descendants of those people.
Well, the ledger is from the Upper Mine, Upper Ore Bank from 1899 to 1900, and every page, there are more than 80 pages, but every page is just a litany. It's like reading a phone book of Catoctin Furnace and Thermot: Hoke, Stightley, Sweeney, Noonamaker, Kesselring, Miller. There's just so many names that you see every day in Thermot, right, and they're in the ledger. So people come to the log house and look at it, and they say, oh, that's my great-grandfather, that's my great-grandfather's brother. It's just really interesting. It also shows what they made, how much they paid to the company store, what their rent was, whether they had to buy wood, and then it shows what they had left at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they didn't have anything left at the end of the month, but they did have a house over their, you know, a roof over their heads. So they're, you know, and a job, but it was tough life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now let's go back to the early 1800s when the furnace is now operating to produce materials for this fledgling nation, which of course has had its raw materials cut off. Essentially, all of the things that they used to get from Britain are no longer available. What did the furnace look like leading up to the Civil War in that area in the early to mid 1800s? Who ran it? Who lived? Was it still employed by African Americans, and who owned it?
We think that the African Americans, based on the age of the last burials, that after about 1840, the African Americans were either manumitted or moved away, and the European Americans were really doing the labor at the furnace. The furnace was had its one of its biggest heydays in the mid 19th century. A gentleman by the name of John Brin owned it. He also built Harriet Chapel. They were really doing very well economically, making, as I said earlier, stoves, andirons, firebacks, pots, pans, and that sort of nails, that sort of product for the young country. But it would wax and wane in its ability to produce, partly because there were new ways of making iron that needed, you know, there was modernization, and it took a lot of money to do that. And so finally, when Pennsylvania had its excellent anthracite coal and it had the Bessemer furnaces that were very hot, much hotter than the 1600 degrees that we had at Catoctin Furnace, the industry really moved to Pennsylvania. And that was really the death knell for Catoctin Furnace.
So it was the technology that made the difference.
It was the technology. It wasn't the workers. They were always, they were always there to, you know, make the iron, and they had the skills. But when the technology finally needed to be upgraded and the money wasn't there, that was the end.
Yeah. Much like today.
Yes, much like
technology
today.
Technology ends many industries and new industries pop up.
Absolutely.
That sort of thing. How was the furnace affected by the Civil War?
Well, the furnace during the Civil War had, it didn't change hands.
This is my big question. Who were they making stuff for was the
big
question.
They were always making stuff for the North. And there has been some evidence that plates were made for the Monitor, but that is actually not something we can corroborate. What we do know,
the Monitor,
is the ironclad ship,
that submarine ship,
right,
that mm-hmm. fought down in Hampton,
yes,
Roads,
exactly.
And Monitor and Merrimack, that's
right,
it.
The Monitor and the Merrimack. And what we know, though, is that the plates were actually made by a company in New York. However, it is possible that some of the iron for those plates came from Catoctin Furnace. We just know that they weren't actually cast at Catoctin Furnace. But throughout the Civil War, when they were operating, they were making goods, for instance, kettles for the soldiers.
Right.
That was something that was needed constantly. So they were making mostly household goods. We don't have any evidence that they were making weapons.
Uh-huh. No bullets or anything like that?
Not during the Civil War.
Interesting.
They had enough of that during the Revolution, because there was some rumor, perhaps, that some of the cannonballs in the Revolution didn't fire correctly, and so they were never fully paid. As we are thinking we might have to go back to Congress and say, you
owe us some money. Good
with
luck
interest.
With that. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But it's true, though. The furnace was never fully paid. They were paid partially, but not fully.
Yeah, yeah. And there was never any incursions by the South into the furnace? Because I know they took over the whole city of Frederick for a period of time.
Well, there were incursions, but they weren't successful. Let's just put it that way.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so going through the Civil War, coming up. Oh, by the way, I want to touch on this briefly. You mentioned Harriet Chapel. Harriet Chapel was built in 1820, is that what you
said?
Yes,
in the 1820s, yes.
What influence did Harriet Chapel have on the Catoctin Furnace Village?
Well, it was the, as the village church, it's the church that the people in the village went to. There was now a place for funerals and for weddings and baptisms, and it really was the center of the village. There was also a store in the village. So, as I was saying earlier, it was a very self-contained community. You had basically everything you needed was there. And it has remained so to today. When you drive up 806, you really feel, you have a village feel when you're there.
You know, no doubt about it. I keep, you would think you would see a sign that would say, Catoctin,
mm-hmm.
because it does look like a little town, but there's nothing there but the furnace. And,
right.
And many people have seen it, but I doubt very seriously if many people stop and visit.
Well, they should come on May 11th. We're having our spring in the village, which will, in conjunction with Harriet Chapel, who's having Sarah's Garden Social, and we'll have pass-along plants, which are plants that are from the village. They're historic cuttings from village plants. We'll have refreshments, all kinds of crafts. We'll have people making pots, weaving, woodworking, a blacksmith, so you can actually see these crafts in action, and you can also buy wonderful Mother's Day gifts.
Wow, that's a great idea. Let's talk about that when we come back from break. You're listening to The Point, and we're in the studio here with Elizabeth Comer from the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society. We'll be right back.
What a woman can do to your soul. But she can't take you anyway.
42 or 50? Cozy's Tea Room features Harney and Sons rich teas with their finest selections. Cozy's Tea Room serves a First Lady's Tea, full afternoon tea, or light afternoon tea daily. Groups? Oh, ask about our Mamie Eisenhower or violin tea performance. Teas are by reservation only. So call at 301-271-7373. That's 301-271-7373. Cozy. Making memories 79 years later.
Liberty Tax Service is open year-round and can help you with a wide range of tax-related services. Let Liberty Tax Service in Walkersville help you now. Individuals, small businesses, and students, we can help you file fast and accurately. Liberty Tax Service has years of experience preparing your taxes. Liberty Tax Service is conveniently located at 138 Walkers Village Way in Walkersville. Call them today at 301-845-6707.
Hi, my name is Michael Betteridge, and I am the general manager of AM 1450 The Source. In an effort to continue to bring you the finest in local community programming, we are proud to announce a new and exciting program, Rely Local Frederick Business Spotlight. And we want to invite you to listen to a fast-paced, informative showcase of regional small businesses. This program is for you, whether you are an entrepreneur, a consumer, or just someone interested in opening your own small business. Caressa Flannery, your host, will interview a new business leader each and every week. That's Rely Local Frederick Business Spotlight every Saturday at 1:30 p.m. right here on AM 1450, The Source. A good Saturday morning to you. You're listening to The Point. This is Michael sitting in for Vicki Grinder, and I'm here in the studio with Elizabeth Comer, and we have been talking about the Catoctin Furnace. And Elizabeth, you mentioned the upcoming Spring in the Village event. Tell us a little bit more about that, please.
Well, on May 11th, in conjunction with Harriet Chapel at their Sarah's Garden Social, we're going to be having Spring in the Village at Catoctin Furnace. The log collier house from 1810 will be open, as will the stone house across the street. They'll be filled with crafts and craftspeople making making their goods, blacksmithing, woodworking, weaving, pottery. We're also going to have these mini gardens made of pass-along or heirloom plants and herbs and flowers, perfect for Mother's Day gifts, and handbags, all kinds of wonderful gifts. So we hope you'll stop by and enjoy Spring in the Village on May 11th from 9 to 4.
That sounds like a blast. And, of course, that's the day before Mother's Day, right?
Yes.
So that is a great opportunity.
It is. You don't have to plan ahead. Just come to Catoctin Furnace on Saturday.
Bring your mother.
Absolutely.
Let her pick it out. That's a great idea. And when people do come, if they were to go to the furnace and stop and walk around, what is in? I've never been in the furnace, honestly. I'm going to have to go down now and
yes,
and
you will
take the tour.
We're going to absolutely.
What kind of things do you have?
Well, stop at the furnace first and look at the interpretive plaques and get the history of the actual furnace, because you want to see the casting shed and the Isabella stack, which are still standing. And you can also go on the manor walk up to the manor area of Cunningham Falls State Park and see one of the Catoctin Furnace stoves that's on display in the visitor center. And then as you go down 806, you can go into Harriet Chapel. It is absolutely lovely. The sanctuary is always open. You can see the beautiful stonework, which is was done by the people who built the furnace. Mm-hmm. And then you can go through the village. There, the log house is open. Well, it's open on May 11th. It's also going to be open on December 7th for our traditional village Christmas.
But
it's also open by appointment. So go on our website, www.catoctinfurnace.org, and our phone number is there, or you can send us an email, and we do special tours. We also encourage you to stop by somewhere in Thermont and pick up one of our books, because that will give you the complete history of Catoctin Furnace.
So if there's any history teachers listening, they can bring their class, they can make an appointment with you to bring a whole class in and have a special tour?
Absolutely, and go through the log house and hear about the history of Catoctin Furnace.
Wow, and some of them from Catoctin High School might even be descendants.
I'm sure they are.
Now, speaking of descendants, how much has this impacted your life to carry on this tradition, the tradition that your mother spent so much of her time on working on this book? When did you pick up that mantle, and how does it make you feel to be able to be a part of this?
It's a real labor of love. I was actually, my mother had finished the book, and we had a reviewer who suggested that a final chapter be added to bring the story through the 20th century. She had ended the book when the furnace shut down for the final time in the early 20th century. And so he encouraged us to put the preservation movement in it. And she and I were working on that chapter when she died 2 years ago. So I picked up the mantle, finished that chapter, edited the book, put in 61 illustrations, which are just really a great way to leaf through the book. Even if you aren't going to read every word, the illustrations are wonderful. And we got it published through History Press, who in just last month, and they've been a wonderful press to work with. And it's for sale in lots of places in Thermont.
Give us the name of the book again.
It's Catoctin Furnace, Portrait of an Iron-Making Village.
Uh-huh. And so, and it contains a lot of the history of many of the people that are listening.
Absolutely. So and it contains, it is the history. It's meticulously researched and documented. So it is the history of Catoctin Furnace.
Wow. That's amazing. How about this legacy that's been handed to you? Why a passion for this? And growing up in that family where this was so important, how are you passing that on to your family?
Well, from the very beginning of my life, all I ever heard about was history. It was the Catoctin Furnace was discussed at the dinner table, it seems like every night when I was growing up.
Yeah.
I grew up on a farm near Kriggerstown. We had an archaeological site actually on the farm.
Really?
And so I became an archaeologist.
Fascinating.
My mother was a historian. I'm an archaeologist. And my husband is an archaeologist. Our oldest daughter is an anthropologist who may go into the subfield of archaeology. Okay. So I guess it's bread in the bone. But it is, once you sort of get on this bandwagon, you can't jump off. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. And it's because it's a puzzle. We basically explore the past and bring it back to life. I think that it really gives people a feeling for their place in the world and in the time, the layers of history, if they understand what's come before them. And I just think that's essential for understanding how important your part of the world, your part in the world is.
All right. Tell us once again as we wrap this up, Spring in the Village on May the 11th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., right?
Yes. And then we're going to have a book signing at Barnes & Noble in Frederick on June 22nd, Saturday, June 22nd, from 1 to 3. And the book is available at the Cozy and the Shamrock, the Zoo, Catoctin Mountain Orchard, all kinds of venues. Timeless Trends, absolutely. John Brown Jewelers, all kinds of places and the park. So if you're interested in the book, also Amazon.com.
I was going to say, is it on Amazon?
It is.
There you go. That's an easy way to do it. It'll come in the mail the next day.
Absolutely.
And give us your website information again,
please. It's www.catoctinfurnace.org, and we keep it updated religiously, so it has all of our events. And please come to our meetings. Our meetings are open, and we would love to have you.
Okay. And a phone number for booking tours. Give us that finally,
yes,
please.
That's 410-243-2626.
410
243-2626.
Mm-hmm. Okay, write that down, everyone. Elizabeth, it's been such a pleasure to have you here in the studio. Thank you so much. And especially, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for your passion for history.
Thank you, Michael. It's my pleasure.
Okay. You've been listening to The Point, and coming up now, in just a few minutes after the news, we'll have Danny Lipford's home front for you, where you can learn how to fix your house. Boy, it's that time of year for that. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great Saturday.
To everything, turn. There is a season, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance.
You've been listening to The Point, brought to you by the Cozy Restaurant and Inn located in Thurmont, Maryland. One of the most well-known and historically recognized restaurants in our region. Tune in every Saturday at 9 a.m. where you will hear your host, Vicki Grinder, drive the message straight to the point.